Hi everyone. In the sixth aliyah of this week's double parsha, Tezri Matorah, we hear about Tzaraat Habayit. So the parshiot describe in detail a lot of the afflictions that a person could get in various ways. And finally, towards the end, we hear this very interesting version of Tzaraat Habayit when it actually befalls the house of a person. And the psukim in Perek Yudalad, starting with Pasuk Lamed Gimel, describe that when you get to the land and you see that a person has Sarah on his house, and the person should come and tell the Kohen and say, like, this is what is on my house, and the Kohen should tell him to finua tabai, to empty out his whole house before he comes. Then he'll come, and et cetera, et cetera. He closes the house, and the story goes on from there. But I think just in these first few psukim describing the Tzaraat Habayit, we can learn a great lesson just beneath the surface. So the Midrash asks a question, Midrash Tanhuma asks a question about why does the Kohen need to tell this person to empty out his house? If the Tzaraat is on the outside, or even if it's on the inside, it's confusing as to why he needs to take all of his possessions and put them outside, put them on the street in front of his house. And the Midrash explains that it's because there's an aspect of Mida Kenega Mida going on here. This person who is afflicted with Tzaraat Habayit had an Ayin Ra, this like evil eye or bad eye, and his Mida was that he did not want to lend things to other people, and he was being stingy with his possessions. So therefore now he has to put all of his possessions on the street, and this way everyone could see them, and he's kind of almost atoning for a sin by being embarrassed that everyone knows that he had all these things that he was stingy about. He didn't want to lend out. For example, his neighbor walks by and he's like, hey, you had a few extra folding chairs, didn't I ask you for those last week and you said you didn't have them? Or all of his sugar is on the street and he's like, oh, didn't I ask for a cup of sugar previously and you said you're all out this week? So it's kind of this person is going through a process of atonement just from this imperative of finuat habayit. And this midah of tzarut ayin, of stinginess or unwillingness to share, is something that is really looked poorly upon throughout other places also within Judaism. If we look at in the second parak of Mishnayot and Avot, which no coincidence that is the parak we will be learning this upcoming week, in the 10th Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer is describing the trait that is the most important midah of all, and he chooses ayin tov, which is the exact opposite of tzaraat ayin or ayin ra that this person, the Midrash describes, the person who has tzaraat habayit, is suffering or has. And why is ayin tov so great? So I heard an idea once that ayin tov is such a positive midah that Rabbi Eliezer chooses it as his most important midah because it enters into the three realms of life: Adam l'makom, la'atzmo, and ben adam l'chavero. So first, ben adam l'makom, if you have an ayin tov, you're going to look positively at your life status, and your outlook is always going to be, you're going to be content with where you are and be thankful to God because of it. Ben adam l'atzmo, if you don't see the good in yourself, you're able to feel good about who you are. And ben adam l'chavero, Rabbi Yonah describes, a person who's rodef shalom, he's always going to be pursuing peace because he's going to be able to see the good in other people. And through that, all the other good traits will follow. And that's why he chooses it as the prime example of an important midah. And earlier on in the Parsha, in Perek Yud Gimel, and earlier on in Tezria, we hear of a descriptor of what is this nega, what is this affliction, what is it supposed to do for us? And the Pasuk describes in Pasuk Nun Hei, Vara HaKohen Atchar Hu Ka Beis Ata Nega, V'hine Lo Afach HaNega Tadino, V'hanega Lo Pasha Tamehu. It's going to describe what the Kohen will look and at the immersed affliction, and then he'll see if it has not changed et eino. So the pshat understanding of et eino is its appearance; it has not changed its color, and that's when that's when a person has to reclose it, and he has to go back into this isolation period, or he's retains his tamei status. But really, we could say that another way to interpret the word "eino" is I know, his eye, his perspective. So the purpose of getting an affliction, this nega, is supposed to change a person from hafachat, it's supposed to cause us to change from an ayin ra, from this bad perspective that the person was suffering with originally, to this ayin tov, this laudable trait that Rabbi Eliezer describes in the Mishnayot and Avot. And when we describe the Yemei sphere that we currently find ourselves in, there's this balance of, the mourning, the loss of Talmid Rebbe Akiva. We're also, of course, balancing, this happy time period between, almost like a Chol HaMoed, between Pesach and Shavuot. But nonetheless, we have this, we have the time period of losing Talmid Rebbe Akiva. And when the Midrash in Bereishis Rabbah describes what was the sin that Talmid Rebbe Akiva died of, it was Sheta Einehem Tzara Elu Ve'elu. This exact same lashon of tzarut ayin, of stinginess of eyes. They had these narrow eyes looking at each other. And the Sefer Chaim explains that they were not able to see past themselves. They were constantly being threatened by each other. And that others' expense came at the expense of their own. Even like within Talmud Torah, that's possible. You know, someone's chidush is you know, coming at the expense of your own chidush. And someone else's success in class is at the expense of your own. And when we look at this, you know, its entirety, we see that both the Parsha and the Parak and Avot that we're going to be learning this week, and also Yemei Sfira, are all coming to teach us this lesson about Tzarat Ayin, and how we should move away from that trait and move towards a trait of Ayin Tov, and able to look positively on situations and people and things. And it's a very, very difficult task, and should not be belittled. And, you know, if you look at the Pasuk describing Tzarat Habayit, Rashi describes that, you know, the process of going through the house could be a little bit exhausting, but if you look at the lashon of the pasuk, is very interesting. Natati negat tzarat babayit. Hashem says, like, I'm going to put negat tzarat in bayit. And the word natati is generally used in connection with a present, natan, generally a lashon of gifting. And Rashi goes on to describe that while a person is cleaning out their house or going through their house to, you know, take out all their possessions, they're going to find hidden gold that the Kananim previously had hid, and this is going to be kind of a reward for heeding the wake-up call that Tzarat Habayit was served as. You know, some because Tzarat Habayit was thought of as like the first step. Like, first it came to your house, then it came to your clothes, then it came to you. So, you know, if you were the one who went to the Kohen and, you know, listened during the first step, just when it got to the house, then you got this like special reward. Natati, you got this special reward of this hidden gold to then you got to enjoy. So hopefully, you know, we get some chizuk from that Rashi by telling us, you know, now if we heed this call, and hopefully a little bit earlier on in Yemei Sfira, to take this time during this process of Sfira, to heed the call of Sfirat HaOmer, to move our Ayin Ra to an Ayin Tov. And hope everyone has a wonderful Shabbos.